tradition and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Hey, welcome all of you back. It's great to have you here. And back to the phone calls. Here you go. David is up next.
Hey, Paul. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're having a great day today. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
My this time of year, you know, I try to always call you and let you know and just to let her family know that Tammy's family is in our thoughts and prayers, and we certainly remember her around this time of year every
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
I just got a couple of questions for you. And I guess both of them could be yes or no. Do you ever remember a time in any league, or especially the SEC, where two coaches played each other on a weekend and both were fired before Monday?
No, I have not. The only it's not even the same. But the only time I can remember anything close to it, where you've had a number of games. Remember that game between LSU and Auburn, when the loser was going to get fired, it turned out to be Les Miles. A couple of years ago in the Egg Bowl, you had a situation where it looked like Mississippi State was about to win the game, and then remember the Ole Miss player scored what looked like the winning touchdown and did an obscene thing, and it got called off the board, and they lost the game, and Matt Luke got fired, and Joe Moorhead survived. What happened was Joe Moorhead got fired after the bowl game, so that's the closest I can come up with. But no, I've never seen anything quite like this, especially when the winner of the game by 41 points was the first one to get fired. Zach is up next.
What's up, Paul?
Hey, Zach.
Thanks for taking my call, man.
Thank you.
Long time listener, couple time caller. This Jimbo Fisher thing, I don't want Jimbo to be a Alabama analyst like all the fired SEC coaches that have come across.
Well, first of all, Jimbo and Saban can't stand each other. Number two, you normally do that when you're trying to get back in the business, and with $77 million over a period of time, I can't imagine why Jimbo Fisher would need an analyst job. In fact, I think Jimbo Fisher could get a head coaching job tomorrow. It's not going to be that difficult. He's still respected by some people, and the idea of being able to introduce a coach with his name recognition 10 years removed from a national championship really won't be very difficult. It's just ironic that you go back to the 2013 season, the national championship game. It was still the BCS. It was the last year of the BCS, and the two coaches were Jimbo Fisher and Gus Malzahn. And Malzahn was fired a couple years after that, given a $21 million buyout. Jimbo yesterday with a $77 million buyout. Kaysen is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Kaysen.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
We are doing great.
Oh, my God, Paul. This Tennessee game, I think it's about killed me this weekend.
Let me ask you a question. If you go back in recent history, Dooley, Butch, and Pruitt, I don't know if I mean, there were some embarrassing losses, but usually the team was terrible, so you weren't as surprised. As far as a quality Tennessee team, that one was shocking.
Oh, my. Yes, I know. I lost money. I bet on that game. It lost money. I felt like I was watching the 2018 Tennessee team, Jeremy Pruitt team.
Yeah. It did have that. And by the way, for anybody who's a fan of Josh Heupel, that's hardly a compliment.
Mm-hmm. And another thing here.
It was a disaster. And it's really too bad, because a win would have set up the biggest game of the year in the SEC. Still a good game, but, man, did that game in Knoxville lose some luster.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more thing. I have to have a direct message to the Georgia fan, Uncle Lou. I know it's Georgia week, And my team, the Volunteers, we're playing with, we have nothing to lose. So I'm hoping, I know that we're going, that the Bulldogs are going to come into Knoxville and we're going to shock the world, ruin.
Pat is up next in Georgia.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much. I knew Missouri was good. I saw them play in Athens, but I didn't know they were going to annihilate Tennessee. I really didn't. If Sam Pittman is separated from Arkansas, I sure hope that Kirby will put his arm around him and take him into Athens as an analyst.
Well, first of all, Sam Pittman, when he left Athens, was considered the preeminent offensive line coach in the country. Not only that, he was a phenomenal recruiter. So if Sam wants to work, assuming he does leave Arkansas, he will have no difficulty. It's just a matter of what does he want to do.
Well, and Georgia's, I mean, that's going to be a feather in Kirby's hat, because just like you got to be three or four deep in every position on the football field, you got to be deep in your coaching staff, because when you three-peat the Natty, people want to hire your coaches. Another reason I called and want to talk to you, Paul, when Kirby Smart looks at the game film, I assume he already has, I hope he pays attention to two things. The last minute of the first half, clock management. He didn't take that timeout. No points. The first series in the second half, three and out, no points. Now, I know I'm nitpicking, but we have a higher
You are nitpicking, considering. What did Georgia win by? How many points?
52-17, I think, Paul. Oh, Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. They hired an ACC coach who rode Jameis Winston. If you really want to win in the SEC, you can't hire an ACC coach, and the only exception to that would probably be Dabo Sweeney. Do you have an opinion on that?
You know, Pat, thank you for the call. You just mentioned something that I want to think about out loud for a second. I've had some friends throw this up as well. But what about Dabo Sweeney to Texas A&M? The credentials are there. Two national championships. What, five playoff appearances, four national championship, maybe five, maybe it's, I think it's at least four national championship appearances. I'll have to double check on whether there was another one I may be missing. Clemson has been that consistent. But does he fit? Absolutely. Dabo Sweeney aligns very well from a cultural standpoint with Texas A&M. Would he leave Clemson? I think he would. I think they're kind of sick of him, and I think he's sick of them. And I know before some Clemsonite comes out of his basement and starts telling me how wrong I am, after a while that happens. Happens to every coach, usually. And there are a few exceptions. Nick Saban, pretty good exception after 17 years. But I think Dabo would be re-energized. I think he would be able to recruit well out there. He's a good recruiter. He is, you know, his program has slipped at Clemson. It's not embarrassing, but four losses is not the Clemson standard. Dabo Sweeney to Texas A&M, what do you think? We'll take a short break. Back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and Bash is up next.
Jimbo Fisher, yeah, fired. Paul Feinbaum, how we doing?
Good.
That is great to hear. And, Paul, I'm going to do another impersonation of a coach from this last weekend, and I want you to try and guess who I am. I want to thank Jim Harbaugh. I love you, man. I freaking love you.
Bash got gonged right there. Sam, is up next in Kansas.
How are you doing?
Hey, Cam. Hey,
how are you doing, Paul? How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
So I talked to you the other day about Lance Leipold.
Yeah.
So when Lance Leipold apparently is going to get a lifetime contract at KU without apparently – so apparently he's going to not go to A&M, apparently what I've seen. So apparently A&M wants to get Leipold. How do you think it's going to go well with Kansas?
Well, I think Lance Leipold is a brilliant coach, and I think he is someone that is going to get mentioned for a lot of jobs. And I think it's just a matter of where is his comfort level. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Daryl in Baton Rouge.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you making out today?
Hey, Daryl.
Hey, I want to talk about Jaden Daniels for a second.
Okay.
He was the first FBS quarterback to pass for over 350 yards and run for 200 yards in the same game. And then he was the first NCAA player ever to achieve 12,000 career yards passing and 3,000 career yards running, rushing. Do you think that'll put him in contention for the Heisman as first place?
It will put him in contention, but here's why Jaden's not going to win the Heisman. He does not have a marquee game left on the schedule. A&M is not going to do it. It's an 11 o'clock start. It's up against the biggest game of the year in college football at that particular hour. He's not going to have a championship game to play in, which is the most important weekend for Heisman. The Heisman ballots need to be in by Monday afternoon. The championship games are on Saturday, Friday night and Saturday. So even without the loss to Alabama, had he beaten Alabama, he could have been a possible winner. I think he'll be a finalist. It's too bad. That's the way the Heisman goes. But I really make absolute statements, but I do not think he can win. And I don't mean that as a disparaging toward Jaden. I'm a monster fan of his. We talked to Brian Kelly about it earlier, but I'm being realistic. Thank you for the call. Thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Jay in West Virginia. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Hey there.
First time caller. I was calling in about the Jimbo Fisher firing.
Yes, sir.
I think what's going to end up happening is he's going to be at West Virginia coaching them in the next couple of years. They're going to get, because I can see West Virginia getting tired of Neil Brown. He's just not going to work out.
No, I think that is a perfect job. He's a native. People respect him there. It's a big job, but it's not the kind of pressure job that he has in College Station. So I don't think there's any question Jimbo Fisher is going to be back coaching, whether he takes time off. Coaches don't like taking time off. It sounds wonderful. I know I've had a lot of friends who are coaches. They get fired in the middle of November. Within a week, they're ready to coach again. That's just who they are. That's how they are made. Thank you for the call. Trey is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Great show Friday, by the way. And two questions for you about two coaches real quick. James Franklin, the other one about Harbaugh. Is Penn State just going to put up with the two losses every year? Do you think James Franklin's on the hot seat, or is just the same two losses every year going to be good enough for Penn State?
I don't think he's on the hot seat. And it's like, answer me this. If Ryan Day loses to Michigan for the third straight year, is he going to be on the hot seat? And as I ask that question, it is a ridiculous question in structure.
Yes, it is.
But there will be a lot of criticism of him. And hot seat is the wrong word, but people are going to unload on Ryan Day if that indeed happens. So Franklin is not in that same spot. He's a very dependable coach in terms of putting a good program. And unfortunately, Penn State just is not in the same league right now as Michigan and Ohio State.
Paul, question about Harbaugh. And this part of this letter, I read the letter that was sent to them. And this was part of the letter that I thought was the most concerning. And it says, Pettit said in his letter
it was notable that Michigan was not denying the existence of the impermissible scheme, but instead it only offered procedural and technical arguments designed to delay accountability. So it kind of sounds like they're not denying the allegations. So my question for you is this. If they're not denying the allegations and Harbaugh is allowed to coach, would the punishment not be more severe for the NCAA if they find him guilty? Kind of like, you know, when Cam Newton got in trouble, the school suspends players when they're being investigated, because if they know something, they don't want the player playing because they know the penalty should be.
I know what you're saying here, but I think there will be a freeze about that because he's already coached X number of games, and I don't think it's going to get any worse for them than it is. Frankly, Trey, you already know what I'm about to say. The NCAA is not going to punish Harbaugh over this. They may slap him on the wrist for this other incident, but which has taken, by the way, 3 years to adjudicate. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Expired in College Station. How are you, Expired?
What's going on, Paul?
Hey there.
Just sitting here, man. Hey, just sitting here pondering the next move at A&M, which is going to be it's going to be quite the I don't really know how to explain it. I don't know where they're going. And most Aggies that I know, of course, we're just fans, but you can speculate all you want. But this could be, a big-time hire, or it could be a guy like the guy at Kansas or Kansas State or someone like that. And it's just a crazy time in college football. And you also have not so many just pop-out unbelievable coaches out there that are just killing it because there's so much parity now with the portal. I don't know, Paul. I'm really was intrigued by what you said about Dabo, him being a fit. I think he is a fit, but, he hasn't really been winning lately.
Expired. My main argument on Dabo was the cultural fit. It wasn't really whether I would be that excited by it.
Right.
He does have a lot of gravitas, right, though. I mean, he's quirky and he's a whiner. But I think he is a monster name in the industry.
Yeah, and I would, if I was hiring, which I'm not because I'm not getting paid to do all that stuff because I'm not very smart. But anyways, I would really look at Jeff's trailer from UTSA with the ties he has to the Texas High School Coach Association. And I would also, and people will laugh at this one, but the guy at Tulane, Willie Fritz, has done an amazing job everywhere he's been. He's at Sam Houston. He's at Blaine Junior College. What a great coach.
What you have to do, you have to look at Bjork. And, what has he done? When he brought in the baseball coach from, I think it was TCU.
Great hire, yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, he was a highly regarded baseball coach. And I'm not trying to compare baseball to football, but that's the mindset. And that was a big hire, and the results were immediate. College World Series,
yes.
Great success. And so I think you have to look at the DNA of Ross Bjork and go, what has he done, and how will he comport that to this hire? We'll take a break. Michael Bratton returns to the show to take a victory lap.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back and about to change some gears here and welcome in an old friend. I don't think we've talked to this guy in a while, have we? Been a while since, and we're not going to go through all the things that he's gotten right or wrong, but he did get this one right. Michael Bratton joining us. Michael, I appreciate you being here. You look a little happy with the news about Jimbo Fisher losing his job.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You have me on anytime, Paul, but especially on this Jimbo Fisher Monday. I know if I was a Texas A&M fan, I'd be over the moon right now because the Aggies were certainly never a threat as long as Jimbo Fisher was riding the sidelines there in College Station. I think last time I said, Paul, he They fixed the offense because they hired Bobby Petrino to coach quarterbacks and call the plays. I thought that was Jimbo's job. Now, if we just get someone to take game situations, timeouts, when to go for it, we take that away from Jimbo, we're cooking. And thankfully, we took a step forward this weekend in letting him go.
So that is one coach down. Zach Arnett, of course, replaced. We've had that conversation. As far as Jimbo's replacement, Michael, that's the parlor game right now. You know, people, for whatever reason, like to talk about coaches on the hot seat, but what they really like is trying to figure out who the next person is. In your brilliant crystal ball, who you got?
Well, I do enjoy it, Paul, all these sites and writers and what have you, to just throw stuff against the wall. And I'm generally not that guy, but you're asking me to do it. So I'll do it for you, Paul. Urban Meyer, I mean, for the content, would be pure gold. But he is a winner.
Michael, time out.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention because I thought you said Urban Meyer.
Well, if we're throwing ethics and all this out the window, we're just trying to beat Nick Saban finally. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he could do much better. I would say Lane Kiffin, but he can't win the big game, so he's worthless to Texas A&M. But, you know, in all seriousness, Paul, one guy, and I have no idea if he's on the radar. I don't know if he's attainable. But if you could get him, Brohm, up there at Louisville, who was obviously at Purdue before that.
He's a good coach. He's
one heck of a coach, offensive-minded. I think he'd be a perfect fit if you can get him. We all know the ACC is dead in the water when Florida State and North Carolina, all these teams leave. If he doesn't want to stay at that G5 league, he'll come to the SEC.
Michael Bratton joining us. A man for all seasons. Michael, those are some interesting names. Let me bounce around a little bit because I see your power rankings every week, and I thought I was dreaming. This is what Brad has. He's got, for those of you riding in the car on the radio, he goes Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Arkansas, South Carolina, Auburn, Florida, Kentucky, A&M. He's including Texas and Oklahoma, which is very clever of him. Tennessee at 8, Oklahoma, Texas, LSU 5, Ole Miss 4, Alabama 3, Missouri 2, and Georgia 1. For some reason, I can just imagine in Shelby, Alabama, south of Birmingham, the Budweiser dropping out of Larry's hand and starting to dial the number here. How can you rank Alabama below Missouri? Is our question.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I do this, Paul, if they met on a neutral field tomorrow, who would I pick to win the football game? And give me Missouri. I mean, they just thrashed Tennessee to a level I think not even Alabama did. They've went down to Athens, went toe-to-toe with the two-time national champions here. They've come the closest to knocking Georgia off. I am wildly impressed with Coach Drink and everything he's done this season in Columbia. So Missouri, Alabama, they meet on a neutral field tomorrow. It's a shame we won't get the game, but I'd pick Missouri to win outright over the Crimson Tide.
Michael, I don't want to be that guy because a lot of us had criticism of Nick Saban after that two-week debacle after Texas and South Florida, but you're the only one. I mean, the only one who described it as a decaying dynasty. You still subscribing to that?
Well, I don't think they hand out dynasties for winning a division title. But if they're doing that now in Tuscaloosa, I was dead wrong. This is a dynasty in full tilt here, Paul, as they're, the East champion is very likely going to be Georgia again. They're probably going to win 3 national championships in a row. And I'll admit, I was dead wrong on Alabama. Jalen Milroe's been a revelation. He should be getting some Heisman buzz for the progression he's made this season. But, yeah, when they lose to Georgia – and Georgia goes on to win the SEC, win the national championship, they can tout how wrong I was as they got this strong dynasty that's runner-up to Georgia once again. I don't even think Alabama will make the playoff, but maybe that's how we're deciding dynasties there in Tuscaloosa.
Well, I mean, you would or you would not agree that this has been a remarkable comeback for Nick Saban and his program, or you wouldn't agree to that. Apparently, you don't seem that impressed.
Well, they're certainly playing a championship level in the second half. Now, they're getting down to all these teams. But, it has certainly been impressive because I'm among those. I would give Coach of the Year to Drink, but I think probably runner-up is Nick Saban. But at the same time, I could say, well, whose fault is it that we didn't have a quarterback early? Whose fault is it that we got Tommy Reese as offensive coordinator? It's not like, you know, these were Saban decisions that backfired miserably early on. But full credit to him for turning it around and winning the West just in time to get thrashed by Georgia and Atlanta. I can't wait for that.
I can't wait to have you sitting with us right before that game. Michael, I must go to Tennessee next. I know how much you love the big orange. Tough game Saturday against Rink. What was I watching?
Yeah, I'm starting to waver. I used to think Josh Heupel was an elite coach, Paul, but losing in the fashion they did to Missouri, losing in the fashion they did to Florida, getting completely outclassed by Alabama in the second half. I'm starting to waver, and who knows what's going to happen on Saturday, Paul, but I would be shocked if Tennessee is even competitive in the second half against Georgia Bulldogs in Neyland Stadium. So if they get thrashed on Saturday, certainly I'm not saying we fire Josh Heupel or anything, but you know, it's fair to question, was that a one-hit wonder? Have teams kind of figured him out? I don't know. They didn't look like they wanted any part of Missouri on Saturday, Paul, and that's troubling because that's a team I think Tennessee fans expect to beat Missouri annually. I don't care where that game's played.
We're talking to Michael Bratton here, and you know, I don't know why I was so prescient to think that in Shelby County, Alabama, a man would be sitting there wanting to get a piece of you. Are you good to say hello to your friend?
Of course. I think I owe him some beers, too.
Okay. Larry, you're on with Brat.
Hey, what's up, Brat? You wrong every kind of way, brother. You are just off. Yeah, I mean, you ain't even close to being. You're a pinhead. You know what a pinhead is? It's your head and your brain about the size of a pin on the end of that. It bitty bitty. Because you ain't got no walk around sense, boy. I tell you what, you spend a week with me and I get you coordinated. I'm telling you, I'll slap you around a little bit, drink some Bud Lights and go out and party some, get you down. Woo! Now, what do you think? You want me to straighten your ass out?
I don't know how to respond to that. I can't argue with that, Paul. I mean, everything he said is right based on everything I've said about Alabama, but I just know I'm not going to be wrong in this upcoming SEC championship game.
How about a little money this time? How about a little moolah? You want to put some cash down? I know your mommy won't like it.
Hold on, Larry. Brad, I mean, clearly Georgia will be favored probably by a few, not that much, because so you really do believe Georgia will put a pounding on Alabama?
Yeah, I think I said 20 points before. I'm going to back off that, Paul. I'd say more like 14. I think Georgia will probably win by 14 points in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's Larry. Better back off more than that. Hey, you say what, have that quarterback in you, bam! Hey, that's what's going to happen to Georgia. Hey, listen here, brother. That defense is mean. They are mean, downright ass mean. And I'm going to tell you something. Georgia's out there like a bunch of plates, you know. They're throwing the ball here. And everybody's open, they're throwing to. They ain't had no real defense on that ass. And Bratton, how about $100?
Ooh,
yeah, I'm down for that, Larry.
Now, Larry, let me make sure I don't want any young people to think I'm condoning gambling. I don't do it myself.
That's right. You're right, Bob.
But are you are you taking the bet straight up, Larry? Just winner of the game?
Yeah, I don't need no damn. He better be trying to get some points. His ass is dead meat, son. Woo, you dead in the water, Jack. You like one of them old.
I got to do my job as the umpire here. You have the $100 to pay up if Brat wins the bet, right?
Right. I want my damn beer too, Brat.
Is this even legal, Paul? I don't know, but I'm in
Brat,
favor of
based
it.
On that backdrop you got there, I have to ask you the same question. You do have $100.
It may take me a couple days, but I can get it, Paul. I can get it.
Okay. You gonna buy it from your mommy?
Okay, Larry. Thank you very much for joining us. Okay, Brad, I give you credit. No other guest is willing to get in the ring with a 77-year-old guy with four pacemakers.
We got to be careful, Paul. I mean, he's liable to take our jobs with that kind of analysis that we're getting from Larry. I mean, that was great.
Hey, Brad, I've heard worse with some of the folks lately around college football.
I can't wait for that game, though, Paul. I plan on being down there. And, the final time, it's East versus West. Maybe it should be Alabama, Georgia. And who knows? I mean, if there's one team that's going to beat Georgia, I don't think there's any of these Big Ten teams, ACC, Pac-12. Get out of here with that. I think the only threat to Georgia is Alabama. So that should be one heck of a game. And they may as well just crown the national championship in Atlanta that night, in my opinion.
That I agree with you on. Brad, we may see you before then. I don't know. We're coming up to your part of the country this weekend, so let us know if you're around.
Absolutely, yeah. I plan on being there. I don't know if you've seen the slate, Paul, but it's hard to hype up the SEC schedule this weekend.
Well, it's better than it used to be. I mean, there was a time when there were no good games. At least we have not only in addition to that, we've got a really interesting game in Columbia, Missouri. Billy Napier zipping in there for a showdown.
Yeah, it may be his last time to a Columbia. Who knows, Paul? I don't believe they got South Carolina on the schedule next season. But, Billy Napier, he's got one heck of a recruiting class. They're losing recruits daily now at this point in time. But that is something he's got to hang his hat on. So, hey, Florida fans, I think they're dying to see who their next coach is going to be. I'm getting asked that daily.
Well, it was at this juncture 2 years ago, the next day after the loss to Missouri, that now ESPN commentator Dan Mullen was shown the door.
Can we get Dan Mullen back in Gainesville? With Billy Napier's recruits, I mean, I think we might have something there.
Well, we could just make Napier the recruiting coordinator. Michael Bratton, we'll see you this weekend. Thanks, Michael, joining us
from
the SEC podcast. Never a dull moment and never a secure coach when Brad is on the show. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We were just talking about the Bama-Georgia game in Atlanta in 2 weeks. Brett McMurphy reporting that Georgia will open a 3-point favorite over the Crimson Tide, making the number of times Alabama has been an underdog in the last 17 years, I think three. They may have all been to Georgia, haven't they? I believe that. I mean, Alabama was an underdog to Georgia, I believe, in 15. The SEC title game 2 years ago, and what about the national championship? I think Alabama was a favorite in that game, wasn't it? So, yeah. So, once again, the only team that has been favored over Alabama since Florida in 2009 is the University of Georgia, and they very likely will be the favored again 2 weeks from Saturday. Let's get back to the calls here. And Dustin is in Austin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
Hey, I was wondering, so I don't know if you know Jim Harbaugh personally, but with all the allegations and everything going on from a personal point of view, what are your thoughts on the whole situation? How do you feel about Jim Harbaugh and whether he's a guilty party in it or not? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Justin, I know him sparingly. I have met him. I have spoken to him. Don't know him well. I've always thought until this episode that Harbaugh was someone of high moral integrity. Never really thought in fact, I thought he was a little bit too idealistic in terms of issues like that, and you know, very, very almost puritanical. I don't know on this case. I mean, I have a hard time believing he didn't know about it. I think it's one of those situations. He was under the gun, and he was desperate, and he saw a path for success by using someone else to gain the unfair advantage, and he took advantage of it.
I don't 100% agree, but then I guess my other question would be, how do you feel about the way that the Big Ten went about actually addressing this with Harbaugh, not actually reaching out to the university and informing anybody of the punishment that they were give to them?
I don't know anything more than what I've read, but I really don't believe that. I mean, Harbaugh using that line today about I had to find out about it on social media. Everyone knew it was coming out, and the university, I'm certain, informed Michigan it would be coming out at whatever time. I mean, what is the Big Ten commissioner owe the University of Michigan to give them a 30-second heads up when they're just simply releasing it? I mean, does it really matter? I mean, there are certain things you'd like to hear personally, you know, personal things, about life or death. But cry me a river for Jim Harbaugh that he had to hear about this on his phone.
Well, besides Jim Harbaugh, what about these students, these kids that are playing, and the effect that it's having on them? I mean,
I watched the circus after the game, and you know, Blake Corum and the assistant coach. I mean, they look like they're going off to war.
With all the
bravado and all the stuff that they're talking about. So I mean. It feels like a Disney movie where, you know, some high school gets vilified and they all come together and they have to fight back against the big bullies across town. I think if you're a college football player, you're thriving on this. I thought it helped them win the game Saturday as opposed to were being affected by Harbaugh's absence. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.